that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like. How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Beosonic sound experience. And that, that's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it? Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S. Order now at Acura.com.
How are you now? Oh, how are you right now? I'm back, folks. Back from a short little hiatus. Apologies for not announcing it at the previous episode that I did, but I did go to the Ice Cube concert on Saturday night, so I was unavailable for that game, but I think most people would probably admit my boy Jared Book is he's a pretty good listen, and he swears a little bit less than me, so maybe folks who are slightly put off by some of my swearing maybe enjoyed not having me around for a game, but I'm back, so hello and welcome to episode 62 of the Bottom 6 Minutes podcast, presented by Habs Eyes and the Prize. I am Matt Drake, and I'm here to talk to you about your Montreal Canadiens continuing their road trip, taking on the Nashville Predators in Tennessee. Lots to get to in this one. The Preds, so you come into this game, Preds are one of the hottest teams in the league. They're in a playoff spot, but they're in the last playoff spot. So they're one of the wild card teams. They're the second wild card as of now in the West. And the Habs, very not a wild card team right now. So, you know, I said this before they went on the road trip. They were playing four playoff teams in four games. It was going to be tough for them to get any wins there. And so far, they've actually done quite well against those playoff teams. They've been to overtime in the previous two games. I mean, I think that's better than anybody could have expected going into this road trip, to see them playing close against, you know, superior teams on paper. So we're going to get to the recap, talk to you a little bit everything that happened in that game. But first, BetOnline continues to be your number one source for all your basketball wagering needs, including pro and college hoops throughout the year. With up-to-the-minute odds, stats, and trends, you can follow your favorite team's path to the playoffs with live in-game betting, contests, and all the best player props. Experience the world's best wagering platform anytime from your desktop or your mobile devices. Head to BetOnline today to become part of the team, and remember to use promo code BELIEVE. That's BLEAV for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here. Now, you know, I watched the highlights of the game against the Lightning, and I was surprised, and I was again surprised by the way that the Montreal Canadiens started their game against the Nashville Predators. It was honestly a very good start. The second and third lines of the Habs spent their entire first shifts in the offensive zone. So, and you look at who is on those lines. I mean, the second line has Armia and Joshua Roy on it, two guys who have spent time in the AHL this season, one of whom is a rookie. The third line is centered by Jake Evans and has Josh Anderson and Brendan Gallagher on it. I mean, these are not lines that you would expect to be able to do that, but it's just their first shift, right? And you can't read too much into the first couple of shifts, and unfortunately, pretty early in the period, Caden Gooley takes a trip behind his own net, takes a tripping penalty behind his own net, and the Preds can't score on that one. The Habs actually managed to kill it off, but it seems to remind them that they need this game a lot more than the Habs do. They are trying to hold on to a wild card spot, so they start playing considerably better after that failed power play. However, the Habs are skating with them, but of course, with just under 5 minutes to play, Philip Forsberg with a good forecheck, he keeps the puck in, leads to Luke Evangelista finding Forsberg at the side of the net, Jake Allen down and out, really good lateral movement there to make him make a save for him virtually impossible, and Forsberg scores, makes it 1-0. That's all we had for the first period. We go into the second, and honestly, the second is pretty back and forth. Chances at both ends, but then about 5 minutes in, Luke Shen beats the absolute shit out of Josh Anderson in a fight. That was not a close fight, not a good idea for Josh Anderson, and that seems to spark the Preds. The very next shift, they go out, it's Forsberg again, puts it out front for a completely uncovered Gustav Nyquist, and he makes it 2-0, and there was some bad defense on that shift from the top line of the Habs. Really, the top line of the Habs looked like their worst line through the first period and the early goings of the second period. I mean, on that second goal, Nick Suzuki was kind of caught puck watching. And, you know, I mean, Forsberg and Nyquist just kind of played around on them and had fun. They looked like they were out there for a practice almost. And you know, it was not a good look. And the Habs are down 2-0. But again, they're still playing really good overall hockey. I would say that they deserved to be in a much tighter game than they were. And eventually they get there. Eventually. So there's a few missed calls by the refs against the Predators, right? They called Jordan Harris for a bullshit holding penalty. I guess it was a hold. But the Predators are getting away with the same things. Like when the Habs were shorthanded off that Harris call, Nick Suzuki almost had a breakaway. He gets held up and they don't call it. And then later, Nick Suzuki's going in. He dangles around one of the Preds' defensemen. He's walking in, trying to set up a chance, and he gets held yet again. And you can see the frustration on his face. He actually said something to the refs, which he never does. But this time, they actually make the call. The Habs, unfortunately, can't get anything done off that power play. However, it gives them some momentum, and all of a sudden, they get themselves back into the game. Arbor Jacki with a good pinch at 5-on-5. It leads directly to Jake Evans getting the puck in the faceoff circle down low, throws it back up to Brennan Gallagher in the high slot, and he one-times that thing past UC Saros, who had been very good for the Preds up to that point. Great goal by Gallagher, and it's 2-1. The Habs have a chance, and then off the very draw at center ice, we get a wild one, folks. Puck goes from Nick Suzuki at center. Cole Caulfield taps it back to David Savard. He comes across the red line. He's just trying to dump this puck into the zone, and it kicks off the stanchion almost in the corner. Like, it's almost in the corner when it kicks off the stanchion and kicks straight back out to the middle and into the net. UC Saros had already gone behind the net to try and play the dump in, and that was a bad idea. And just like that, it's 2-2. David Savard, he can get it done from fucking anywhere, folks. What a wild goal. That's all we had for the second period, but I mean, that's all the Habs needed was just a little bit of luck. They had been coming up against a very good goaltender, and they were playing good hockey, man. Again, they deserved to be in a tighter game, and they found a way to make it so. We go into the third period, and honestly, the Habs now, they're just looking like the better team. I mentioned the top line was struggling a little bit earlier on in the game, but now we've gotten to a point where they're playing much, much better. So basically, the Habs are rolling three very competent lines and a fourth line that they're barely using, but is really keeping its head above water, admirably so. They're looking like the better team. They're making the Preds struggle, and none of that fucking matters. It's hockey, man. Just over 7 minutes to play, Ryan O'Reilly gets the puck down below the goal line. He comes out uncovered to the bottom of the circle and shoots, beats Jake Allen far side on the blocker. I felt like that was one Jake Allen probably should have had, but what are you going to do? Ryan O'Reilly coming out completely uncovered like that. It's tough to D up as a goaltender. And, you know, the Habs are back down a goal, and it looks like maybe they're going to lose this game. But then, Joshua Roy steps up to the offensive blue line and picks Roman Josi's pocket. He walks in, uses the other defenseman as a screen, and rips an absolute laser beam past UC Saros, ties the game up at 3. They don't call him Le Sniper Beauceron for nothing. Ties the game. Not long after that, though, Michael McCarron knocks one down in front for the Preds, puts it into the net, but wait. We get a look at the replay, and it looks like maybe it went off his head. Did it go off his stick? Either way, it was definitely high, but if it goes off his head, it's a goal. If it goes off his stick, it's not a goal. And Martin St-Louis makes the smart decision to challenge that one. Turns out it, in fact, did go off the stick. It's a high stick. Goal gets called back. We're right back to 3-3, and guess what? Nobody else can score. We're going to overtime, and in overtime, the Habs start with a very short 4-on-3 power play. It ends. They can't get anything done on it. It looks like they're really just biding their time because they wanted to get to 4-on-4, and with good reason, because immediately after the 4-on-4 starts, Cole Caulfield is just circling around the faceoff circle. Everybody thinks he's going to shoot when he comes around and he starts heading back downhill towards the net, but instead, he passes off to Nick Suzuki, who looks like he's almost standing on the goal line at that point, and he snipes top Ched. Game over, 4-3 in favor of your Montreal Canadiens. What a game. I'm losing my voice now because I've been talking so fast, because I was actually hyped up by the end of that game. Like it was a good game of hockey. And that's one of the things that I've been asking for, right? Win or lose, I just want them to play well. And they did exactly that against the Predators. I mean, they had a slight edge in scoring chances, slight edge in possession. You could very much argue they deserved to win that game. And this is why, you know, I know Team Tank's not going to be happy about the 2 points. It's a playoff team. It's a team that they probably should be losing to more often than not. But the reality is, you know, if you're on Team Tank, I think you have to look at that one for what it is and go, listen, they outplayed a playoff team, and that's good news. If they're capable of putting together a game like that against a team that is probably going to be in the playoffs this season, what are they going to be able to do next year when they're healthy, when they've added more players, right? This team's on the right track. And yeah, that those 2 points, they hurt the draft lottery position a little bit. That sucks. I'm with you on that. I don't like that. I want them to draft as high as possible this summer for good reason. I understand why Team Tank wants it. It's for good reason. You want to get the best possible player in that draft. But just look at that game, man. It was one that they deserved. And unless you want them to just, I don't know, bench all of their best players and even bench some of their backups and their, you know, their depth players as well, it's going to be tough for them to not find games that they're capable of winning, because that is some of the best hockey that you're going to see them play. And when they play like that, they're going to be able to find ways to win more often than not. So good on them. They deserve that one, and it was enjoyable to watch as well. So player of the game, who are we going to pick for that? It's going to surprise absolutely nobody that I'm going with my boy, Le Sniper Beauceron, Joshua Roy. I'm sorry if you wanted it to be Suzuki or Caulfield, or I think there was a few guys who maybe were deserving in that game, and I'll get to all the performances that I liked, but I got to talk about Joshua Roy first and foremost. I mean, that line, the second line, for most of the game was their best line. Again, the first line took a little while to heat up in that game. They were really slow to start. And the first little bit of the second period as well was not very good. And while they were not very good, it was the second and the third lines that were really, you know, picking up the slack, and the second line in particular. So Joshua Roy was a huge part of that. His abilities on the forecheck, his abilities on defense are becoming much more known quantities at this stage. I think when he first got drafted, I think nobody knew very much about him. I think I did my absolute best in his post-draft seasons in the queue to kind of make people aware of what he was doing out there. And I think what he did at the World Juniors made people even more aware of what he's capable of doing. And we're seeing it now. I mean, that goal was absolute insanity. He stripped Roman Josi, one of the best defenders that we've seen in a long time, right? Still, to this day, one of the best defenders in the league, walks in and rips an absolute BB. This is an underrated aspect of his game at this point, is the shot, because people haven't seen him use it as much, because he's been more content to kind of set up plays and do the forechecking and go to the net. He's been a very good net front presence, and he was a very good net front presence in that game. But you can't forget that he has the ability to absolutely unleash a shot when he wants to. And, you know, this was him at his very best in that game. He showed you exactly what he's capable of doing. And fuck if I'm not absolutely thrilled at the prospect of them just throwing Kirby Dach on that line next season and saying, we got a tailor-made second line for us right now. That would be just chef's kiss. I cannot wait. I hope that's what they do. I know I'm probably thinking way too far ahead at this point. Some people are probably slamming their steering wheel while they're driving and listening to this and saying, hey, let's settle down. We don't know what's going to happen next season. But for me, I'm always trying to look ahead, especially in a rebuild year. And I think that would be a great line. And Joshua Roy would be great on that line. It wasn't just a goal for him in that night. I mean, early in the first period, there was actually a point where he goes in, he's forechecking. I can't remember who it was on D for the Preds, but Roy's kind of bumping him and pushing him into the corner, gives him a whack on the stick, interrupts his pass, and it ends up giving Yoel Armia a really good scoring chance. So he was all over that game, and he's, for me, deserving of player of the game here. But I will stop talking about him, because I know some people are probably sick of hearing me boost Joshua Roy every time I get the chance. There were other players as well that really, you know, imposed themselves on that game, and one of them was Nick Suzuki. Slow start, but he nearly had, again, the shorthanded goal that I talked about where he got held up. Nearly had a goal there. Nearly had a goal right after that where he ended up actually drawing the penalty. Gets an assist on that ridiculous Savard goal coming off the stanchion. But That, I guess, goes back to his face-off prowess, which he seems to be getting better and better at face-offs. And sometimes you win a face-off and it can lead directly to an opportunity for your team. It did there, and you know he's reaping the benefits of working on his face-offs. And you absolutely, you got to just take your hat off to that goal in overtime, man. He's basically standing on the goal line and finds a way to get it up over a goaltender that, by the way, Saros was, I mean, he was the story of the game for the first, what, I don't know, 30 minutes of it? Like, the Habs were getting chances, and they just couldn't get anything past him. And he looked like he was going to, honestly, for a while, I was saying to myself, they're going to get shut out. So for him to put that shot up over his shoulder, he put it precisely where the goaltender was never going to be able to get it. It was just a beautiful goal. And you could say the same for his line mates that kind of started the game slow, Caulfield and Slafkovský, but they both had moments in that game where they really, again, imposed themselves. Slafkovský had a play on that power play that they had, the one that Suzuki actually drew, where Slafkovský had to come screaming back into the zone. Again, I forget who it was, but he had to like reach around, poke check him. And that's a play where when you're reaching around a guy like that, you're running the risk of taking a penalty every time, right? You might get your skate, or your stick rather, into his skates. You might get your hand too much on the body to the point where they call it a hold. There's a lot of different ways that a ref can get you there. And Slafkovský was so smooth with it that he somehow managed to get nothing but puck. And avoid taking a penalty and take away a chance completely from the opposition, which would have been disastrous at that point. It would have made it. It would have been at that point 3-1, and I don't know if they would have been able to come back from that necessarily. It would have been tough. It would have been a lot tougher than it was otherwise. So, gotta again give tons of credit to him for that. Cole Caulfield, I know. Everybody at this point is pretty much aware that he's playing with something. We don't know what it is. It's some kind of an injury. But he had some great A chances that he created out of nothing in the third period where, I mean, if the puck rolls right for him, he might have had two goals before that game was even over. And then in overtime, man, he's really figuring out how to use the threat of his shot to create opportunities for his teammates. And that's huge. Because it's going to eventually open up more opportunities for him. We're going to see, I think, next year. I know I said this the last time when he got hurt. I think next year is when we're going to see him cross that 40 mark. Because once the tape is out there, once the tape is starting to get evaluated by other teams, they're going to be a little bit more worried about the fact that he can dish it. And it's going to open up some of those lanes. And he's going to know when to exploit them. And he's not going to shoot 8 or 9%, whatever he's shooting this season, for the rest of his career. That's nowhere near his average. He's going to come up on that shooting percentage. And the way that he's passing the puck right now is going to create opportunities for him as well. I mean, you saw on that one of their D-men was like diving towards the middle to try and block the shot. Even though they were at 4-on-4 at that point, they weren't on the power play anymore. And it opened up a perfect passing lane for Suzuki, and he just said, I'm going to take that. I mean, as slow as they started that game, they really, all three of them, came into it at the right moment. And that's what a good top line can do, you know? They struggled a little bit. A couple of the other lines picked up slack for them, and then when the time came, they really started playing. And then before I end this, I feel like I got to talk about the third line as well, because honestly, Josh Anderson, I thought he played a pretty good game, especially for him. He's had some rough ones this season. Jake Evans had a beautiful setup on the Gallagher goal. And then Brendan Gallagher. What can you say? The guy's had a tough go with injuries in his career. He's had a tough go this season in general. He got a suspension that he had to come back from. He's relegated down to the third line at this point. His contract is one that you probably want to move away from for sure if you're the Montreal Canadiens, but his character is one that you would like to never have to move away from, because he's one of those heart and soul players, right? Gives you full effort every night. He's not the player he once was, but you're still seeing that effort level, and we saw that from him in this game. He's turning that third line into a threat, which you wouldn't think it would be, because Jake Evans is not a very offensive player. Josh Anderson is kind of all over the place this season. He is definitely a more offensive-minded player than a defensive-minded one, but lately this season, he's just not been capable of generating any kind of offense. And Brendan Gallagher, the way he's playing, his crash-and-bang style, getting to the net, always making himself open for his teammates when he can't get to the net, it's helping them create more than they might otherwise be able to create. And it's nice to see. And he's going to have to do a lot more of that to live up to the price tag that he's getting right now. But on this team, on a rebuilding team, I think there's still value to some of the leadership that he brings. And, you know, as long as he's not getting himself suspended anymore for stupid hits, then I think he can still continue to provide that kind of a value to the club as they look to get through the rest of this rebuild. Outside of that, you know, they had Jake Allen was fine in that game. Defensive side, you know, there were some lapses here and there, but nothing in particular. I really liked Arber Jacki again in that game. He was extremely good at moving the puck out of his zone for most of it. Had a couple of rough patches in the first period where he was trying to get it out. But outside of that, you know, when he was getting hit with a reverse pass in his own zone from behind the net, he was taking it, turning the other way, and immediately making the perfect breakout pass. That's the kind of thing that he needs to work on if he wants to stay in the NHL permanently as of, you know, for the rest of this year and starting next year. That's exactly what he needs to keep doing and keep working on. And it seems like he's taking that to heart. He had a slapper that he let go at one point in the third period that broke somebody's stick that was trying to block it. You know, I've mentioned this before. I think I'd like to see him get back to trying to sneak those wristers through because he used to be so very effective at it. But either way, I mean, he's becoming more of an effective overall player. So I'm splitting hairs here. If I really want to complain about the type of shot he's using at the blue line, it doesn't really matter. He's playing very good overall hockey as a defenseman. Liked Jordan Harris in that game. I'd be harder pressed to find somebody I didn't like in that game because honestly, I don't think there was anybody. They played a very effective game. If you don't believe me, take a look at the stats or rewatch the game. If you don't like stats, you can just watch what you saw there. Like they. If you played that game 10 times, I think they win 6 or 7. That's the analogy that we always use, right? But if you like stats, take a look. They had 53.13% of the even strength shot attempts. They had 55.32% of the shots on goal at even strength. Scoring chances. They were actually down on scoring chances. They went down 24 to 21, so that was 46.67. But high danger scoring chances were 9 to 8 in favor of the Habs. That's 52.94%. So it was close, all right? It was a close game, but they had an edge in some of the key metrics that you would normally determine a game by. And I don't know, for me, that's enough for me to not be upset that they got two standings points that may hurt them a little bit in the draft lottery, but we'll see. There's still a lot of hockey left to be played. The deadline is still coming up in a couple of days here, so we may see the Habs kneecap themselves a little bit more and start losing at a much faster rate. That being said, you know, some of the teams around them are going to do the same thing, but look, if they end up eighth overall in the draft order, that's how good that they were, or how not bad that they were. I guess you could put it. It's okay if they win games that they deserve to win. It's not okay when they win games that they don't deserve to win. This was one where you could say pretty positively that they did deserve it. So, decent game. I'm going to cut it off there. I don't have much else to say. I'm not upset about anybody. I was upset about the refs, but I don't want to turn this into one about the refs. We don't want to talk about those Muppets. We want to talk about the guys that matter, which is the players. What are we running? Over 22 minutes, almost 23. Alors, c'est une soirée énorme pour les employés de soutien. We are on Spotify, Google Play, Apple. I'm on Twitter at DrakeMT. Drop me a follow. I would appreciate that very much. This episode was brought to you by Bet Online. Thank you, as always, for listening. And of course, à la prochaine.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.